Ladies and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into combat sports.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide is brought to you by the World Boxing Council, the WBC.
And now, the host of the longest-running fight show in radio and internet history.
I rode with him. I know what an idiot this guy is.
Pedro Fernandez.
Hey, Pedro, how you doing? And good evening to everybody out there listening to the show.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen.
Emanating, coming at you from the multi-million dollar Sports Byline Studio. Check it. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC TV. Often imitated but hardly duplicated, 37 make that 38 plus years now of knocking out albums. Who am I? My name is Pedro Fernandez. I am ever so modest, though, so I'm also a four-time Golden Glove champion and an award-winning boxing writer. So that sort of puts me in a unique category. But guess what? I've always found out the average boxing fan has a different insight into the game of boxing, a different way of looking at it. So straight up, I will open up the toll-free phone lines just for you at the top of the hour here. 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. Of course, there's also the guilt-free, no-commitment text on. You want to text us here in the studio? Feel embarrassed? Don't want to go on there? A lot of people think if they come on the air, they'll choke and this and that. So I get it. So you want to text us here in the studio? You can. The text number, 415-275-1613. That's 415-275-1613. Well, Oscar De La Hoya, Oscar De La Fishnets, not going to be fighting next week. He's in the hospital fighting COVID, allegedly, down there in Southern California. Of course, Evander Holyfield's going to step in for him. So what kind of fight was this going to be anyway if a guy like Holyfield, who weighs about 211 pounds, can fight Vitor Belfort, who at one point in time was a 205-pound UFC champion? So was Oscar De La Hoya making this guy cut off two arms and a leg to make some type of freaky weight, or was he going to move up in weight and get licked? Bottom line is, Oscar probably wasn't going to win this fight, so it was probably good that he got COVID. One time, COVID's good here for De La Hoya. Straight up, we got that. We got Jake Paul and a whole lot more today on Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC TV.
From the tree, just like the story of Adam and Eve, perfect love was all that I was living for.
The sun was turning upside down.
She came near, she whispered in my ear, she seemed to know the reason why.
The mighty Tower of Power bringing us back from the break. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC TV. Straight up, my name is Pedro Fernandez. We'll take it to the Bronx and bring in the Bronx Bomber in a couple of minutes. We're talking about, of course, boxing's PhD, Socrates Palmer. But I do want to talk about Jake Paul and Tyrone Woodley. Of course, Tyrone Woodley, not Tyrone. You hear so many guys saying Tyrone. Why can't they just look? Anyway, bottom line is, it's Tyrone Woodley. Tyrone Woodley, the former UFC champion, I believe, at 170 pounds, a welterweight champion, of course. And he and Jake Paul engage in I guess you call it somewhat of a spirited fight, this and that. Jake Paul got rumbled, I think rattled at one point in time. But the bottom line was, I thought that Jake Paul showed good basics. Hector and I talked about this. In fact, Hector Martinez is like, he worked with Roberto Duran in the end. You know, when Roberto was putting things together, when he didn't have all his skills and didn't have all his reflexes and all that kind of good stuff, when he was old, but they improvised. They knew how to do things. In other words, he's a boxing genius at times when he isn't calling people bumps. Okay, he is. And anyway, he analyzed the Jake Paul Tyrone Woodley fight, and he said to me that, you know, for a guy that started late in his life as far as boxing is concerned, he's doing okay. I mean, he throws in a good 1-2, and he throws an occasional uppercut, but you can't expect this guy to throw 4 or 5 punch combinations. You know, it just ain't gonna happen. He's not Sugar Ray Leonard, but he is effective. He did win that fight last week. I watched most of it, and I thought he did win that fight with Tyrone Woodley. So Woodley's going to squawk a little bit later in the show how he wants to fight again. But the bottom line is, I thought that Jake Paul won. So Jake Paul should just move on, or he should retire or something like that. But the bottom line is, Jake Paul sold 16,000 tickets. 16,000 tickets. The aforementioned Hector Martinez and myself, we won 6 Golden Gloves between the two of us, okay? 4-2. We probably sold 80 tickets combined in our entire careers. That's just the way it was. I mean, the ability to sell tickets is, it's unique. It just is. I don't care if it was his hometown or not. 16,000 seats. And the pay-per-views, they're still counting the numbers. All kinds of people are watching it. And people say to me, oh, it was a bit of a fraud, the main event, this and that. Hey, call it what you want. It was entertainment. People got off on it. And the co-main event, listen, the co-main event allowed Amanda Serrano, a lady who, a Philip Puerto Rican American, who's been, sort of living in relative obscurity in women's boxing because of the fact that she really can't get a big platform to jump off on. So she got this big platform to show her skills on, and of course she did show her skills, won all 10 rounds, no doubt about that. Of course her opponent was a bit undersized, but at the end of the day, Amanda Serrano looked like she's the real deal in the world of boxing. Of course, we've talked about her time and time again. She was on the show when she was real green. Back in the day, time when I think she was 11-0 or 12-0, but now she is, I believe, 27-1. Bottom line is she is the real deal, pound for pound, better than Carissa Shields in my mind. That is women's boxing. As far as fights coming up today, Josh Warrington is going to be taking on Mauricio Lara. I think that's going to be on the Zone. Oscar Valdez had something going on in his system regarding a stimulant when he was in training a month ago, and the rules are you can have the stimulant in your system if you don't have it in your system during competition. And the competition, I believe, is the last 4 weeks before the fight. You know, if a guy's smoking weed, this and that, and he tests positive for weed like 5 weeks before the fight, big deal. As long as it tests positive for weed during the fight, or, of course, marijuana shouldn't count, but I'm talking about other drugs as well. At the end of the day, Oscar Valdez will be taking on his Brazilian challenger next week in defense of the WBC 130-pound crown. Of course, that's going down on ESPN and ESPN+. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. It's also called WBC-TV. We take it to the Bronx and bring in the aforementioned PhD of boxing, Mr. Socrates Palmer. And how are you today, sir?
I'm doing great, Pedro. How about yourself?
Oh, you sound all full of energy here, man. What are you taking volumes back there at Kasaka or what?
Nah, man, just high on life. We got some really good weather after getting tons of rain the other day here in New York. So I guess that has me kind of chipper.
You know, there's no such thing as climate change. What have you heard of the subways flooding in New York like that and streets flooding in New York? Never, not too often do you hear that.
Yeah, I mean, there were people that were literally in a raft in the streets. I mean, hey, it looked like something out of Tom Sawyer.
What's going on with the illegal apartments and stuff like that? We could just go back to boxing. What's up with the illegal apartments? Are they like washing down the street?
Well, I mean, that's something that's been around here forever, and it's just a reflection of it's a necessity. People rent in New York City. I mean, I don't have to complain to you about rent prices. It's has to be number one or two. I know San Francisco's right up there. And people that live in basement apartments is because they can't really afford anything else. And it's a trickle-down effect because landlords, taxes, and water bills, they try to squeeze every penny they can out of a three- or four-family home. You know, I'm assuming that the mayor is going to crack down on it because we are a reactive city here. Nothing gets done unless something terrible happens. And I believe there was a tragedy.
Sock, that's the way of the world. Listen, when I was a cop, I was proactive as hell. You know what I'm saying? I just was, right. I mean, I was spit happened, we were on it. You know where I'm coming from? And now cops just react. Everything is just reaction. In other words, we were thinking about things before they happened. We had forethought, this and that. But now it's just react and clean up. That's just the way the world is at this point in time. Anyway, let's go back to Jake Paul just for a second. I thought he looked okay. I mean, he's not going to be Sugar Ray Leonard or anything like that. But you know what? If he can sell 16,000 tickets, I'm proud of him. I'm sorry, but I got to say that.
I am on board with you. I mean, do I think he didn't look as good as he did in his previous fights because he fought someone with a pulse. You know, I got to give Tyron Woodley some credit. I think if he would have been more active, he could have maybe stolen a decision or had a better case for it. But yeah, I mean, Jake Paul is good for boxing. I mean, let's call it what it is. I mean, what's the old saying that, the boat that the, I forget. I'm going to butcher the phrase, but you know what I'm saying? He's good for boxing because everyone gets paid.
Okay, like you know what's funny?
Amanda Serrano fought on the biggest stage she's ever fought before. And this is a young lady that's fought at the Garden. And she never had more eyes, I'm sure, on her than she did last week. Jake Paul is probably as good as any prospect right now. And if you look at what he's doing, considering the the years of boxing that he has in him. I mean, he's been taking, how long has he really been fighting? You know, less than 3 or 4 years, you know? So I'm going to give Jake Paul a C plus. Okay. You know, it was a good fight.
Okay. You know, and the king of smack when it comes to MMA is Jorge Masvidal. Of course, he's done his era of boxing. He was a street fighter. He broke his bones fighting in the backyards with a Kimbo Slice, people like that on YouTube about 10, 15 years ago. Anyway, he had just gotten, I think in his last fight, he got chilled. I mean, knocked out cold. He was asleep for like 150 count against Israel Adesanya in the title fight. And of course, he was talking smack. And he was talking.
Usman.
Oh, it was Usman, yeah. And he was Usman. talking all the smack about Jake Paul and Tyron Woodley. You know, he should just shut up and go away. Anyway, Masvidal had his run. His run is over. Let's talk about Oscar De La Hoya. In the hospital with COVID or in the hospital with shrinking intestinal fortitude? Which one is it?
Oh, damn.
That guy, Vitor Belfort, I remember being around him in Vegas, okay? And of course, this was 2004, okay? That was like 16 years ago. But he was a big dude. You know what I'm saying? I mean, he was a big dude. And Oscar De La Hoya, I've been around him a lot too, and he's not a big dude.
No, he's not
anywhere.
He's not a physically big person. Right. You're right. And, he looked good in pictures. You know, his open workout for his age. But he was going to be fighting someone who's naturally heavier than him and thick bones. And Oscar hasn't been active. So,
I smell something amiss here when Evander Holyfield can step in for the former welterweight champion.
That is, yes, that is like some bizarro, yeah, that's something crazy. I've never seen a more jinxed year for boxing than we're in. And how about Triller? You know, Triller, they keep getting all these fights, you know, derailed. At least they're able to save the show because Evander was in training. And it's probably a more competitive fight.
I'm chuckling because Evander Holyfield and I met in 1984. It was May 1984. I'm at the Western Olympic Trials, way in over my head as far as competition was concerned, for that Olympic year. No doubt about that. But anyway, there I am sitting there and I'm bitching about the stale pancakes. And the pancakes are like stale. They're like a rock. You can pick the pancake. I remember what I did was I picked the pancakes up and I dropped them on the plate from the fork and they made a noise like that. Okay. So anyway, Holyfield's sitting. I don't know Evander Holyfield. I have no idea who he is. He's sitting right across from me and he said, I go, ain't this a blah, 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 blah. And he told me, man, be glad you're eating. And I said, oh, okay. And then I found out a little bit later it was Evander Holyfield. And of course, later on in life, I would call him V. That was my little nickname for him, V. But Evander Holyfield stepping in for Oscar De La Hoya. That just has so many different ramifications. I don't know which direction to go. We are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC TV, of course, coming to you from the Sports Byline Studios in the City by the Bay. We'll return, of course, with Boxy's PhD after the break. We'll talk about Mr. Socrates Palmer. This is Ring Talk coming to you from the Sports Byline Studios in the City by the Bay, San Francisco, California.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide is brought to you by the World Boxing Council, the WBC.
I am not these bubblegum dudes you're talking to.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
So you don't want to fight me again?
I will. We'll
I do. You the one that got wobbled, almost sent through the rope.
Tattoo.
I'm not scared of running back.
If you get the tattoo, I love Jake Paul. Let's run it back.
Bet.
That's dogging that dude pretty good. I mean, that's like making him put his girlfriend's name on your chest or something like that. Ooh, that was sort of nasty. But hey, It's part of the hype and this and that. Jake Paul, of course, and Tyrone Woodley carry on after the fight, saying if you get a tattoo saying, I love Jake Paul, I'll give you a rematch. Well, Socrates, I got to ask before we get back to serious business, is he going to get the tattoo?
Boy, I don't know. Depends. I don't know his finances, but, you know, he's got some bills due. He may just get a tattoo.
That's a tough shot, man. If you got some big, in other words, if you got some bills due, get the tattoo, this and that.
And is he married? I mean, his wife may say, listen.
Bottom line is, at the end of the day, I think it was entertainment, and that's just what it was. And of course, Amanda got her stage. You talked about Amanda getting her straight stage. Of course, MSG, she's had garden eyes on her before, but nothing like this. Oscar's been KO'd by COVID. Of course, now, let's talk about the upcoming fight. I'll take it back. So let's go back in time. Yordan Arguez and Manny Pacquiao, if they run that one again, evidently Justin Fortune and Freddie Roach are going to war, because you sort of expected that because, you know, the guy's 42 years old, somebody who's looking to make excuses. Freddie Roach is going to say it was Justin Fortune. Justin Fortune is going to say that it was Freddie Roach. And, of course, Alex Ariza is going to say it was both of them.
They should have never broke up that team, man. I mean, that's the bottom line. But, you know, just to stay on topic, it's, you know, how can that fight be any different? Manny really looked every bit of his age, you know? I mean, unless the only way Manny could win that fight, if it's some sort of exhibition and they fight like these, you know, abbreviated rounds, three rounds or something, there's no way that Manny could, that's it. The window closed. And it's not that Ugas is great, but, you know, against that version of Manny Pacquiao, he was great. And I personally, you know, wouldn't want to see it, but Manny has earned the right to, you know, to have his career end the way he wants to. He's given a lot to the sport, and if he thinks that it was a fluke, then, you know, more power to him. You know, I'm sure that it's going to be the biggest payday Ugas will ever see, and he deserves the payday as well. So, you know, but I don't see it ending any different.
No doubt about that. You know, we were talking this week about Canelo doing his thing against Caleb Plant. Of course, it's going to go down in November, and it's going to be for all the belts, this and that. So here's what's up. He cleans up all the belts at 168. I guess David Benavidez is the really the signature opponent for him at this point in time. Am I right or am I wrong?
I think he's the fighter that probably is viewed as the biggest threat to Canelo because, you know, he's probably the more accomplished between him and Plant. He's a really big, super middleweight, and he has a hellacious work rate. I mean, he throws a lot of punches and he's kind of awkward. Me personally, I don't think he's got the footwork to hang with Canelo for 12 rounds. But I think he's a bigger challenge than Caleb Plant just because of the work, the volume. And he's a bigger puncher.
When I was a matchmaker back in a long time ago, anyway, licensed matchmaker here in California, I had a guy that could fight here locally. I won't mention his name anyway. Nah, he couldn't fight that good. He sold tickets. Okay. Anyway, he was like 3-0 and they told me you got to get an opponent for this guy. So I looked around and I said, I'm not going to bring any stiffs. I'm just not going to put stiffs on my card. And they're telling me you got to do it. You got to do it. He sells tickets. I said, I'm not going to do it. So anyway, I came up with a guy that was 2-9, but the guy was a killer. And they call him Pantera. They didn't call him Pantera for nothing. The guy got out of jail like he was Ricardo Mayorga in 1990s. I mean, he got out of jail like a week before he was going to engage in this fight. He took the fight on 2 days' notice. He came to the city by the bay, San Francisco. I checked him into the hotel, this and that. And to show you how bold this dude was, Socrates, I'm the matchmaker and the ring announcer and the co-promoter and the whole. I'm doing everything, selling tickets, whole nine yards, security. He ain't coming down for the fight. He's in the dressing room. So I got the guy that's selling all the tickets in the ring and they're going, Danny, Danny. And the people are going absolutely berserk and the opponent's not there. And I'm saying, WTF, what's going on here? Where's the opponent at? So I go back upstairs. He goes, you hear those people? I said, yeah. He goes, you want me to come downstairs? It's going to cost you $500 more. And I said, huh? He goes, yeah.
What?
$500 right now, or I'm not coming downstairs. He goes, and you can suspend me. I don't care. I already spent 4 days in San Francisco. That's what he told me. I mean, you know,
he held you hostage.
But bottom line, I gave him the 500. So he went down there. He went down. He showed up. I mean, went into the ring, knocked my guy down in the second round, got robbed out of a decision after four rounds. Okay, but he was 2-9. And what I'm trying to bring, why I'm bringing this up is that a young Mexican boxer by the name of Jeanette Zapata, by the age of eight, the only age of 18, she did not have a winning record, and she was an opponent per se, and they put her in a fight that, according to John Bray, the former heavyweight boxer down there in L.A., he said she was way overmatched. And when you overmatch people, you get them killed. And how do I know this? I'm a former matchmaker. But when you make 90-10 fights or 110 fights, in other words, you like 100% of this person's going to win because the other person doesn't have a chance. Like 100%, you're supposed to be doing 65-35, 60-40, that's the way you're supposed to make a little bit of, just give your guy a little bit of an advantage, but you don't give your guy a total walkover, okay? Well, they brought in this girl as an opponent, and she got hurt, and 5 days after she got hurt, at the age of 18, she has succumbed. So, bottom line is, matchmakers do this all the time, okay? I mean, they play with people's lives, they gamble with people's lives, and I think there should be a penalty to be paid here, Mr. PhD. I just think so. I don't think that this guy, I think his nickname is Pow or something like that. But anyway, I don't think the matchmaker should get off here and just walk away.
You know, I mean, the fight took place in Canada.
Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah.
He definitely should be under investigation. But you know, we see mismatches all the time. Some commissions, you know, like in New York, or, you know, which is one of the better ones, they want to prove an opponent. The young girl, it's a tragedy. She's 2-4. She had been knocked out previously by another undefeated fighter. And really, I mean, you remember the movie, with Humphrey Bogart, the Harder They Fall?
Yeah.
You know, and they puffed up this guy. Like, what does a win, you know, do for your fighter, other than a confidence builder? I mean, it's, you know, reality will set in when they fight somebody legit, you know, and well, it's very sad. 18 years old.
The events promoter, Yvonne Michel, the Yvonne Michel group, anyway, they announced the death on social media on Thursday, saying she died about 3:45 p.m., of course, Montreal time. We offer condolences to her family, but I will say this, I'm going to say it again. If you, listen, you have somebody's lives, you have somebody's life in your hands here as the matchmaker. You just do. And whether you want to take the responsibility of that or not, you should have to. It should be forced upon you. In other words, you know, when I made matches, you know, I used to watch John Chargis sit there and bite his nails after making matches, watching fights go on, because he never made 90-10 fights. You know what I'm saying? He tried to make 65-35 fights or 60-40 fights, this and that, and then he would bite his nails down to almost bleeding. You know, I mean, that's just the way it was. But you didn't do the 90-10 fights, and this was a 90-10 fight, and it shouldn't have taken place.
Yeah, and it's a shame, because Montreal is a great fight town. I mean, a lot of good history, and they've put some great cards together over the few, you know, past 5-10 years. I mean, unfortunately, we know what happens every time a fighter steps into the ring. Literally, they are taking their own life into their hands. I mean, they never leave the same. It's just a shame. I guess the matchmaker and the fighter, I mean, the matchmaker, not so much, but I'm sure. I wonder how the fighter's gonna, how her career is gonna go forward. I mean, she's 31 years old, and it was only her fifth fight or something like that, fourth fight. So, she probably won't fight again. I think it's gonna traumatize her.
You know, yeah, I can go back in time, but David Gonzalez not only killed Rico Velasquez, he killed another guy in Las Vegas. I think Mangila, the former Olympian. But the bottom line is, David Gonzalez killed two guys in the ring. He and I were tied at one point in time. So, tragedy in the world of boxing, yes, but is it avoidable? Sometimes it was. I think it might have been avoidable here. Anyway, Sock, have a good week. Kiss the wife. We'll talk soon.
Thank you, brother, for having me on. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Boxing's PhDs, the great Socrates Palmer Jr. of Brooklyn, New York. Of the Bronx, excuse me, not Brooklyn, the Bronx Palmer. Anyway, you are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Take it to the break. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC TV.
Yeah, just play it safe. I mean, if you are vaccinated, still you have to be cautious and wear the mask. I mean, there's no hurry. We have lived a great life, and there's so many happy moments ahead in everyone's future. Just let this pass, be intelligent, get your vaccine, wear your mask, protect your family, protect your loved ones, your friends, and we will together make it out. This is so unfair to have someone go through a process and then the guy next to you ignore it and then be bound to go to a hospital and die. Mm. So many beautiful, dear people who did not have the option to have a vaccine passed away. So many people have suffered all over the world. We should all work together. And if you have a different belief, then okay, but stay home. Don't go out and don't be part of the continuation of a new wave.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide, brought to you by the WBC, the World Boxing Council.
Thank y'all for tuning in. All the fans around the world, we love y'all.
The president of the World Boxing Council, Mauricio Sulaiman, on vaccines. Of course, vaccines. Get your vaccine. Let me tell you about vaccines. I went to two funerals this week. First funeral I went to was opiate-related. In other words, a lady was in her late 30s, this and got hooked on opioids, this and had lived a responsible life, a college graduate, all that kind of good stuff, came from a good family, a law enforcement family. I kid you not. Anyway, she fell victim to opioid addiction, like my mother and so many other people, my uncle, so many other people. Well, the bottom line was, she OD'd from it, so we had the funeral this week, and I attended it with a friend of mine, and that was in the middle of the week. And then Friday, we went back to another funeral, same family, only this time, God, same family, only this time it was from COVID. So they had a COVID death, and they had an opioid OD, sort of reflection of what America is nowadays, or what's going on in America right now. An opioid death, an overdose from you know, pills, heroin, all that kind of good stuff, because that's what heroin comes now, in edible pills. The bottom line is you get them pharmaceutical, Vicodins, all that kind of good stuff, Percocets, all that crazy stuff. You know, so people are dying, and it's unfortunate. These people had to go through two funerals in the same week, so may God be with them. I'm not a big God guy, but they are, so may God be with them and their family at this time of a sad time, no doubt about that. Now, time to talk about referees. Somebody from the Twitch thinks here, Lit up referees. Who are the best referees ever? Off the top of my head, Arthur McCanny, Joe Cortez, Carlos Padilla. Who else? I don't know. That's right off the top of my head. I'm just those three guys. Tony Perez, I think, was one of the worst referees. Of course, Muhammad Ali hated Tony Perez. Tony Perez, I had to scream. I ran up to the, I was either in 1999 or 2000, but I just watched, Rico Velasquez die in a ring where I was begging the referee to stop the fight. I'm begging this referee to stop. Hank Gillespie was a referee. Hank, I accuse officially on paper in writing of having the aroma of an alcoholic beverage on his breath before he went into the ring to officiate a fight in Sacramento, California. Unfortunately, the man he was drinking with was the head of the California State Athletic Commission, so they were drinking buddies, okay? So that didn't work. Anyway, so I'm begging Hank to stop this fight with Rico and David Gonzalez. I mentioned David a little earlier. David had knocked him down 5, 6, maybe 7 times in this fight, and the fight hadn't been into the 9th or 10th round. Anyway, they send him out for this last round, and I'm telling the referee, please stop Hank, stop the fight. I went up, I left my seat, went up to ringside, please stop the fight. Hank told me, sit down, son, let me do my job. I said, but you're not doing it. So the kid died 40 seconds later. He was dead, laying there on the ground. I kid you not. So I'm screaming at the referee, all that kind of stuff. Maybe that was a preventable death. Maybe it wasn't. He was already bleeding in his brain. So here I am ringside in Atlantic City. And Tommy Morrison, of course, is a favorite over Ray Mercer. Ray Mercer being the 1988 Olympic gold medalist at heavyweight, 200 pounds. And he came out and he was rocking Mercer all over the place. I mean, he must have hit Tommy 25 or 30 times. And the referee wasn't stopping the fight. Tony Perez was like one of those wrestling referees, you know, like looking the other way. Like he didn't see the guy use the brass knuckles or the baseball bat or something like that. I mean, where was Tony Perez on this one? So I'm watching the Grim Reaper circle the ring here in Atlantic City. And I've seen boxing death right in front of me before. I'm watching it, okay? And I'm watching this deja vu, okay? So I run up, you can see me on this fight, run up the ringside and I'm waving my hands up and down all over the place. Larry Hazard, stop the fight. Larry was the athletic commission guy. Larry got up and finally got Tony Perez to stop the fight. Had they not, Ray Mercer might have still been punching on Tommy Morrison. Okay, so Tony Perez was one of the bad referees in my mind. Of course, he got a lot of big time assignments. the second Ali Frazier fight, that was in the Garden. Of course, it was a 12 round win for the NABF title by Muhammad Ali, a 12 round decision. But the bottom line is the fight should have been stopped in the second round. Joe Frazier was like, he wasn't on Queer Street. He was like beyond that. He was like, oh, I'm rocking and rolling. And somehow Perez jumped in to stop the fight, or stop the fight, thought the round was over, this and that. The round wasn't over. He knew what time it was. Bottom line is Tony gaffed that day. Of course, and I think it cost Joe Frazier some time on his life as far as boxing life was concerned. And it definitely cost Muhammad Ali another 10 rounds of hell with Joe Frazier, a guy that he had knocked out in 2 rounds. No doubt about that. So I'm looking at some of the other referees. Yeah, Joe Cortez made a mistake in a fight that I televised, the Evander Holyfield, John Ruiz, the inaugural event. I think they did it two times for sure. Anyway, the first fight, of course, I thought Joe Cortez blew a low blow because Ruiz, anti-Luis, that's what I used to call him, he faked the low blow. I thought he got hit around the belt, okay? And he was faking like he was, oh, God, he got hit where the sun never shined, that kind of good stuff. Anyway, I thought that Joe Cortez got fooled in that one. But Joe's had some stellar performances. Who I think was the best referee of all time in my era was a guy that sort of called me Pedro. I'm talking about Arthur McCanny. Of course, the referee for the first Ali Frazier fight, the greatest fight of all time, of course, was at March 7th, 1971. Bottom line is he was a referee, and he was the guy that was the king of fitness. I'll tell you a little Arthur McCanny joke here before we move on. But Arthur McCanny was a fitness freak. In fact, he had a pull-up bar in his house like I do. He had a pull-up bar in his house, and the thing is that you're supposed to, every time you walk under the pull-up bar, you're supposed to do some pull-ups. Well, I haven't been doing too many pull-ups lately. Anyway, bottom line is, Arthur used to have this mandated for his kids. When his kids walked into the kitchen, or when they walked into a certain room, and they walked under the pull-up bar, they had to do 5 or 10 pull-ups. I forget what it was. Anyway, I forget what the number was. So Arthur was talking about how solid his midriff was and this and that. And I was standing there with him, and we were talking, and Bone Crusher Smith was there. James Bone Crusher Smith was the only, heavyweight champion, only got a hold a portion of the heavyweight title to ever have a college degree. I think it was from the University of North Carolina. I forget what it was in. Anyway, bottom line is Bone Crusher Smith is there, and we're talking this and that, and we're all going around, and Arthur's like showing off his belly, his flat belly and everything like that. He goes, like, yeah, he goes, blah, 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 got a great gut, this and that. So then Bone Crusher just hits him in the gut. Boom! And boom, knocks the wind out of Arthur. Arthur falls over, this and that. That was a sad day. Bone Crusher was just playing around. But, you know, when you hit somebody and they're not expecting it, spit happens, whether it's the head or the body. The bottom line is Arthur McCanty fell down that day. That was a little sad. But at the end of the day, James Bone Crusher Smith, he respected Arthur to the end, and he didn't mean to do that. Believe me, he didn't mean to do that. No doubt about that. He did not mean to do that. So as far as the rest of the referees are concerned, I think that Carlos Padilla, of the Philippines, a man that refereed the Thrill in Manila. Of course, that's where he sort of came to fame, that and the first Duran Leonard fight, the Brawl in Montreal on June 20th, 1980. I think that he's one of the greatest referees of all time. And why do I say that? Because he allowed guys to fight. In other words, he would tap them on the gloves. When I used to fight, especially in the amateurs, you should see these guys. I mean, every time I learn, you get in there closest and they start running, they break you up. I mean, they just break you up. And if you fought a taller guy, that meant you had to get inside again. Okay, so amateur boxing, anyway, worked against a shorter guy. At the end of the day, looks like Oscar Valdez is going to fight next week. I mentioned it a little earlier. Of course, the WBC 130-pound champion tested positive for an illegal substance. It was a stimulant that they use in training, I'm told. But you're not supposed to do it like a month before the fight. So he sort of like was right on the borderline there. And at the end of the day, he's not going to be penalized in anything, and he will fight next week, of course, September the 10th. ESPN Plus and ESPN, at the end of the day, he's the man at 130, 130-pound champion, undefeated two-time Olympian from Mexico. Of course, he speaks perfect English. He was supposed to be on the show last week, didn't make it. We tried to reschedule something this week, but obviously with all the craziness going on regarding this failed drug test, or this, it was a month ago. Here's what happened. He failed a test a month before the fight, but it was a test that wasn't, in other words, the performance, the drug that he, or the subs, the stimulant they found in the system wasn't one that you could have during competition. It was something that you could have during off competition. They said that was off competition because it was a month before. So the ABC went along with that. So did the, So did the Indian Reservation folks that are doing that at the Pasqua Yaqui Tribal Athletic Commission. And, of course, the ABC, the Association of Boxing Commissions got on board, and the WBC. So all three entities regarding this title fight are on board for Oscar Valdez defending his title next week. Now, is Oscar Valdez, is he in, will this distract him at all? I don't think so. I think the kid's really got, you know, he's got good skills. He's undefeated, two-time champion, 126-pound champ, WBO champion for, I think he had four or five or six defenses at that weight. Now, at 130 pounds, of course, a smaller guy, always small in his weight class. We talked about that in the conversation we had here a few months ago after he sort of upset the boxing world when he, well, not upset me, but upset the boxing world. I mean, I couldn't believe that Ozmaker's had him a 5-1 underdog against Miguel Bertrout. And I said to myself, I'm scratching my head. If I was a betting man, I'd probably want to bet some money on Oscar. I mean, I was undefeated, a two-time Olympian, a champion at 126. The only negative against Oscar was the size factor. We talked about that time and time again, that size matters in two things, pornography and combat sports. This is combat sports. So, therefore, at 130 pounds, he ain't the biggest guy in the world. But guess what? This guy is taking on Robson Conceição, of course, out of Brazil. Conceição is a former Pan Am, I think he's a Pan Am champion, Pan Am Games champion. Anyway, he beat Valdez in the amateur, so this sets up the rivalry September the 10th. Tucson, Arizona. This is Oscar Valdez's, like, second home. I mean, like, because you hear the perfect English he speaks. I mean, he's a Mexican, but he speaks, like, perfect English. He speaks English like a, okay, I'll say it, like a gringo. He just does. I mean, he's like, if you didn't know, you didn't know it was Matt. You didn't know. Bottom line, she's like some white dude on the phone. Anyway, bottom line is Oscar Valdez is from Tucson, Arizona. He'll be pumping his fight in Tucson. Of course, they expect a pretty packed arena down there. I think the arena was going to hold 7,000 or 8,000 people. We'll see how many people pack into that. But, you know, with social distancing, a mask, and kind of good stuff going on. So I hope they enforce all that kind of good stuff. And with the WBC being the sanctioning body, I think they've got to follow some rules as far as the COVID is concerned. Now, don't forget, Oscar De La Hoya is off. His fight with Vitor Belfort. Now, how is he going to fight a former welterweight champion, going to fight a guy that naturally weighs like 200 pounds? Something was up there. Either they were making this guy do Jenny Crank. Did I say Jenny Crank? Either they were making him do Jenny Crank or something like that, or getting him down, making him cut off his arms, his legs, his intestinal fortitude below the belt, the whole nine yards. I mean, the castration or so. It had to do something. How do you get a 200-pound guy down to be competitive with a welterweight? Huh? How do you figure out a weight for that? They never really came up for the weight. Someone said it was 189 pounds. Oscar was going to fight at 189 pounds. I don't think so. So anyway, Oscar's out. Evander Holyfield's in. More power to Evander Holyfield. No doubt about that. A class act. Yeah, he's like 55 or, was he 55 years old? 1984 Olympic bronze medalist. Of course, got robbed in the Olympics when he got, that referee did him wrong. I mean, he threw that shot. They said break. Boom. The punch was already flying. They disqualified him. And of course, that was against Kevin Berry. And Kevin Berry's came to fame is that he trains fighters, mainly from New Zealand down there in Las Vegas. You are tuning to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into the world of boxing and MMA. We will touch on MMA after the break. I'll give it a couple of seconds. Bottom line is the UFC is rocking and rolling today. Of course, any weekend that Dana White's making money is a weekend that I'm not happy. Why do I say that? Because I think Dana White is the single most despicable pimp as far as the world, as far as exploiting fighters is concerned. That's just my opinion. I think he exploits people. I think he forces guys into fights they shouldn't have to take. Women as well. At the end of the day, it's Dana's way or it's nobody's way, and it shouldn't be that way. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC TV.
Mr. Dana White, wherever you are, I have a hit list, but I want to start getting paid. I want to start making heavyweight money. When things ain't right, when things are a little bit rough, I've got.
You didn't tell Dad your family was coming.
Well, he never warns me when he is. So I feel like I owe him nothing.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Everyone said, I wish I was in your shoe. The hundreds of people that wish they were in my shoe, don't know the tenth of it. If they were in my shoes, they would cry like babies.
I said I mentioned the UFC fight night tonight. Brunson versus Till, that's on ESPN and ESPN Plus. Come to us from the UFC Apex Center in Las Vegas, Nevada. Now back to Jake Paul just for a second. He and Woodley both got $2 million. The guy never made $2 million when he was a world champion as far as the UFC is concerned. I doubt if he made $2 million in his entire UFC career. I kid you not. Of course, that's my boy, Dana the Pimp, who I allege is a pimp, who I suspect is a pimp, who I feel in my opinion is a pimp. Anyway, bottom line is, they got $2 million each, and Hector told me this week that Jake Paul took $1 million of his money and sprinkled out over the undercard. So he split $1 million underneath the undercard. And listen, that takes class. I don't know too many guys who have done that. So more power to him, no doubt about that. What am I trying to tell you? I'm not trying to say Jake Paul's the future of boxing, but that was a classy act. He's making all the money. What does he do? He throws $1 million to the undercard. More power to him. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC TV. Of course, you can check out the WBC's interactive website at WBCBoxing.com. My name is Pedro Fernandez. This is the Saturday edition of Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Of course, we come to you Saturday and Sundays at 11 a.m. Pacific time. That's 2 p.m. Eastern time. Saturday for an hour live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, Channel 217, Twitch.tv, of course, the Sports Byline USA channel, and a plethora of other internet platforms. Bottom line is, we come to you on Sunday as well. Saturday and Sunday. Sundays for 2 hours, live on Sports Byline and the same station. Until next time, peace, love, and a ton of respect, and please stay safe. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC TV.